You're listening to Agriculture Today.
USDA September 1st grain stocks reportedly bearish for corn and wheat, while soybeans landed close to expectations. Old crop corn stocks reported 1.532 billion bushels, well above the average trade estimate. Larger than expected figures suggest feed and export use softer than anticipated, keeping more grain in storage as the new harvest advances. Soybean stocks came in at 316 million bushels, only slightly under the average trade guess. Figure, though, largely neutral, showing modestly stronger disappearance during the summer, but again, within pre-report expectations. All wheat stocks, 2.12 billion bushels, that topped the average trade estimate. Larger than expected inventories reflect both strong production and slower early season demand. It adds pressure to an already heavy global wheat outlook. Market analysts say the bearish surprises in corn and wheat could weigh on futures, while soybeans offered little fresh direction. Taiwan's recent pledge to boost U.S. ag purchases by 30% over the next 4 years, driving a new USDA agribusiness trade mission to the island, led by Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Ag Affairs Luke Lindbergh. Mission includes 39 businesses, trade groups, and three state ag departments aiming to secure new sales and expand market access. Taiwan, already the eighth largest market for U.S. farm exports, buying $3.8 billion last year and providing a $3.1 billion U.S. trade surplus. Its high-income consumers favor premium foods, and it gives U.S. producers opportunities in soybeans, corn, wheat, dairy, beef, fresh fruit, and tree nuts. Taiwan's advanced economy and recent commitments also make it a prime focus for U.S. trade expansion. Taiwan trip follows recent USDA missions to Hong Kong, Thailand, Peru, Guatemala, and the Dominican Republic, which generated $64 million in projected sales. Future missions planned for Japan in October and Mexico in November. Low water on the Mississippi River system once again disrupting harvest logistics, reducing barge capacity at a critical time for U.S. grain exports. Following an unusually dry August in the Ohio River Basin, tributary flow into the lower Mississippi has dropped sharply. Gauges, Cairo, Illinois, Memphis, Tennessee, just hovering above low water thresholds, and it prompts restrictions by the U.S. Coast Guard and dredging operations by the Army Corps of Engineers to keep navigation open. Now, restrictions now limit tow sizes and draft depths, cutting efficiency for both southbound grain and northbound fertilizer shipments, USDA projecting record U.S. corn production this fall at 427 million metric tons, with exports expected to reach 75.6 million metric tons. So barge freight rates out of Cairo and Memphis have risen 31% over the past month, but remain well below the extreme highs of 2022. It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
As a veterinarian, we're always looking for ways to improve animal health.
David Renter is the director of the Center for Outcomes Research and Epidemiology at Kansas State University on BRD.
Particularly the state of the industry right now, it's really important to look at, you know, how can we get more animals across the finish line, as they say, in terms of, you know, getting it through the sickness and death loss period and on through to providing safe, wholesome beef. And actually that's sort of the mission of our center is to provide good quality information to decision makers. And in this case, that would be veterinarians and beef producers. I talked today about three different BRD treatment trials, bovine respiratory disease, that is, that were done in collaboration with veterinarians and producers in the field. Those have been done over the last couple of years. And the main question there was, you know, in this type of calf that, we considered fairly high risk for bovine respiratory disease, if they receive a metaphylaxis antimicrobial when they arrive, which in this case was Draxxin was what was used, then those that subsequently become sick with BRD, should we treat them with a similar drug or something that's a little bit different? And that was kind of the impetus of that first one. What we found in that study was that really we didn't see any significant difference in subsequent health events, whether that's continued sickness or death loss. There wasn't anything significantly different between the two treatment groups in that study. And in all these studies, we relied closely with the consulting veterinarian and the producer and followed their standard of practice, if you will. And it was all, they were all fairly similar in that the pen rider or cowboy identified the animal in the pen. They didn't look right? They looked sick. They were brought up to the chute. They had a rectal temperature. They received a clinical score. And they fit the case definition. Then they were enrolled into one of the two treatments.
And the second study?
So the second study was really meant to be a repeat of the first one in a slightly different population. The first study, we actually didn't see as much death loss as what they expected based on their historical records. And so the second study was a little bit different animals but also high risk. The only difference between those studies is then there was a third treatment evaluated. So this had the same two treatments as the first study plus a third one. And it was a little bit bigger study because we had now three treatment groups instead of two. So the big thing that we saw from that study was that the one treatment group had significantly less mortality, subsequent mortality than the other two treatment groups. And the other things that we looked at in terms of retreatments and chronicity, none of those were different amongst the groups, but the death loss was different. So our conclusion from that study, and it's always important to put it in context of the study population, which is one of the things that I reemphasized in my presentation today, is what we see in these treatment studies, you tend to get different responses if they're done with different types of cattle. So we put it in context of the type of cattle that was in that second study, that these 600-pound high-risk commingled steers and heifers that had a fairly high disease burden, you know, about 12% of the cases subsequently died, so fairly high disease burden, that the Resflor treatment was significantly better than the other two treatments in terms of reducing mortality.
It's Agriculture Today.
This land, there's no more perfect place on earth. It provides more than the crop you grow or the herd you tend. It gives you purpose. And to help young, beginning, and small farmers fulfill their purpose, Capital Farm Credit is here for you. Our decades of experience providing advice, products, and opportunities can help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
with Agriculture Today. Here's Tony St. James.
And this is the magic question for this fall season as we rapidly get into it. You know, we're 30 days away from widespread application here and other places around the world, and we don't know yet.
Josh Linville is with StoneX. So are farmers holding back fertilizer due to high input cost or cutting back for good? And Chinese exports are adding bearish pressure. And then India's decision with urea.
We've never experienced anything quite like this. You know, we looked at some of these phosphate values versus the grains. We've hit the worst ever all time. We've since backed off those values, but still very, very high. The farmer is dealing with very low grain prices, and they're struggling financially. So I think when people go to their supplier, whether that be the co-op, the retailer, whoever it is, I think they're being absolutely truthful in saying, hey, I'm probably going to cut back on my application rate because I just don't have the funds to pay for it. Our fear is that we're going to get forward and everybody's going to be in the combine. Yield numbers are going to be big. And listen, we could talk all day about how big or small or whatever the yields are going to be. It's going to be on the higher side. We know that. Big yields remove big nutrients. So is there going to be a change of heart after they're in the combines, after harvest is complete and they're sitting around saying, well, you know what, let's go ahead and put it on. And then you start to layer in, well, what if all of a sudden the farm gate, you know, here in the U.S., what if we start to expect government checks start coming? Phosphate's one of the first things cut. Does that mean it's one of the first things added back into the rotation? We just don't know. I would say today we're probably expecting somewhere between 25 and 50% demand destruction this fall. But it's a coin flip. And this is a situation we've watched for a very, very long time. And the Chinese exports start to resume, it should add some weakness to it. It's been a fantastic situation because we didn't see much of anything January through June. And all of a sudden, July, a big number of tons were exported. August, a huge surge in tons that were exported. So, yeah, all these tons are all of a sudden out there in the marketplace that weren't before, lending to a lot of, putting a lot of bearishness in the marketplace. This has buyers crawling back and saying, ha, okay, finally, I feel like I can have some say in this marketplace. Values have been coming off. And now it's a matter of trying to figure out, well, who's that next buyer to step in? Who's going to be the next one that says, okay, this is low enough for me. I am willing to take a shot at this number. And again, we're just kind of sitting back and waiting. It's a very slow period of the year. We're not quite sure how this plays out. Last week, we actually heard big, big rumors. The announcement was going to come on Friday. Nothing happened. Start of the week, people were saying, oh, they're coming out with the announcement. Nothing happened. And we've seen this game before. Indy will sit there when they feel like they've got some power in the marketplace. They'll put out the rumors. Hey, we're going to announce it's going to come out this day. The day comes. People get excited. Nothing happens. The market gets depressed afterwards. It's a great tool for them to try and push price ideas lower, which obviously helps save them some money. If they come in early, let's say they come in, they're like, hey, we want 1.52 million ton, which is kind of what we think their next tender is going to be to finish out 2025. If they come out quickly, we know the last tender, there was a lot of tons that wanted to sell that didn't get a chance to. Those tons are still out there looking for homes. And they get this world market to themselves. We don't have other world buyers that are stepping in and saying, hey, I also want to buy at this level. Don't forget about me. You get a bunch of different buyers in the market, things start to get heated up again. So by stepping in early, you kind of get the sole attention of the marketplace. However, by waiting longer, let's say they wait a few weeks, middle of October, late October, now all of a sudden you could see price ideas fall even further. We get another 2 or 3 weeks if inactivity in the world, that's 2 or 3 weeks of bearishness in the marketplace. Prices continue to fall, that's money they can put in their pocket. The danger there is that puts it that much closer to world demand starting to step up. Now you could have competition. You could see the prices fall and you could be absolutely right. But by the time your offers are in, everybody else has started to step in. Prices have started to rally. Everybody gets very proud of their product. So it's a very, very razor's thin edge that India is going to be walking for this last tender.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
At Wiley Implement and Spray Center, we are here to keep your Case IH tractors, planters, sprayers, and other implements in tip-top shape this season. Whether you need in-shop or in-field service, Wiley has the factory-trained technicians to keep your equipment running with genuine Case IH parts. Give us a call today or go to WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Probably the top crisis was in the 1930s, the Great Depression.
Arlen Suderman is with StoneX.
When people reference the current farm crisis, or they want to reference a farm crisis, there's not many people around anymore who remember the 1930s. So they generally will reference the 1980s.
That's the historical side, but what about today's downturn? How's it affected the industry?
There are farmers who are certainly hurting as bad as what those farmers did then. So I'll answer the question twofold, for the individual farmers and sectors, and then as the sector as a whole. For some individual farmers, we have a whole generation of young farmers who entered the industry over the last 15 years who knew nothing but low interest rates and good prices for a period of time. And now they're having to adjust to a different environment of higher interest rates and low prices. And this is a very difficult adjustment for them. We're dealing with far larger revenue numbers now than what we did back when they started. And what we're seeing is a growth in loan value. We're seeing production loans being carried over from year to year because they can't pay off their production loans with the crop that they just produced. And so debt is starting to mount. They're getting discouraged. They've not been through a time like this before, and it's very difficult. And we are seeing some farm failures. When you look at the sector as a whole, the livestock industry is doing very well for the most part. There are some exceptions. Most part, it's doing very well, driven by a shortage of protein in this country, a shortage of meat. And so livestock prices are hitting record highs. Consumer demand remains strong. The industry is doing well. Midwest farmers are, for the most part, doing well. Those farmers who are suffering the most are those in the more marginal areas where margins tend to be narrower anyway, like in the plains or in the mid-south, places like that. When you look at the broad picture of the whole agriculture sector, net farm income this year is expected to be around $179 billion. Roughly $40 billion of that will be farm payments. The farmers would rather get their value from what they produce, but that's helping to carry farmers over. And there's probably another assistance package coming from the Trump administration to farmers that's being discussed now. So that's helping get them through. Overall, that's one of the highest net farm incomes that we've had, but it is largely because of government payments that are helping them do that. So some farmers are still doing okay, but they're pulling back and being more conservative and cautious. Others are hurting. The sector as a whole has certainly seen better days, but we're nowhere close to what we were. Farm delinquency, farm loan delinquencies are at about 1.9% right now. That compares to over 7% in the 1980s.
And what are the differences and similarities?
We are seeing something similar today as we're changing our trade routes. We're changing our trading partners. The tariff war is certainly having an impact of that. A loss of China is largely an impact for the soybean market. When you look at corn exports, USDA is projecting record high corn exports. On the other hand, soybean export demand may fall to the lowest level that we've seen in maybe 15 years. And that's largely due to the loss of China. So it depends on the commodity. Wheat export projections right now are at about five-year highs. So it really varies by commodity.
It's Agriculture Today.
In today's tough farm economy, you need to make every dollar count. When choosing your cotton, consider West Texas varieties from Brownfield Seed and Delining. At only $125 a bag, these West Texas varieties are large seeded varieties that shoot out of the ground and have the yield potential that will have you smiling all the way to the gin. Think outside the box and boost your bottom line with cotton seed from Brownfield Seed and Delining. Call 806-637-6282 or visit brownfieldseed.com.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Yeah, the feedlot sector has been a little interesting. I mean, the cattle on feed is kind of what we've been kind of focusing on most recently.
Elliot Dennis is a livestock economist with the University of Nebraska at Lincoln.
When we think of kind of where we're at in that, the light kind of cattle on feed and the correction there has really kind of thrown the market, primarily just kind of leveling it out there. Some of that has to do kind of still with placement weights where we're at and really just kind of the overall slaughter weights that we have kind of cattle. So overall, the market didn't move a ton with that, but I think the cattle on feed report was sorting those things out kind of at the beginning of the week.
He talks about international trade.
You know, as we know, there's a lot of tariffs out there. Even at Trump's recent UN address, kind of touted a lot of the trade deals that have kind of come through. I think for us in kind of the beef industry, the primary thing that we've been watching has really been this China-Hong Kong market. And really prior to the early or really 2018, 2019, when we started to do all these phase trade agreements, we were trading with, you know, Hong Kong and Vietnam, and some of that meat was going in through into China through those markets. And then after we got the phase trade agreement, really we saw that kind of take off in the early part of 2020. And China at one point even became our largest, in some months became our largest trading partner. They really kind of bounced around between Japan, South Korea, or kind of U.S. premium beef. And then as we've kind of seen over the last couple of years, that market has kind of slowly deteriorated. And really then as we've really kind of ramped up these trade negotiations regarding tariffs, other things like SPS measures, yeah, things have just kind of really leveled off. And in fact, the last month's report on total trade was we're pretty much sitting at, in total volume, at pretty much the same volume that we're sitting at pre-trade agreement. So when we think about kind of where the value is in the product, some of that trade has gone away, obviously, because of tariffs. But really, all of that Chinese exports have kind of gone away. And really, we can't rely upon China as a major importer. And really, they're sitting at, in just perspective of kind of where they fit at with other trading partners, are really kind of in that same volume category of like Canada and Mexico. Obviously, our product is a little bit more valuable overseas because of just the transportation cost to get it over there. But really, that's kind of the big change when you think about kind of the boxed beef side. You know, once we've harvested the animal, where does that go? And then, of course, we have the live cattle trade, and really with this whole new world screwworm, that's really kind of impacted the number of imports of live cattle we're able to kind of import in the United States. And that seems like it's going to be for the foreseeable future. There have been some kind of announcements and talk about, you know, basically trading beef resilience that are potentially going to come down from USDA. But until any of those materialize, we can just rely upon what Secretary Rollins has kind of said about, you know, investments into animal infrastructure. Looking forward to the farm bill that we could potentially see, or the skinny farm bill is sometimes being referred to as. Generally, livestock has not been a huge kind of highlight version in any really major farm bills. But what I can kind of anticipate, you know, this year is it could be some animal health identification, particularly around this idea of like kind of preventing new world screwworm in addition to what's kind of already been kind of allocated. So, and this wouldn't be anything in particular from like a significant deviation for what we've seen in the past. In the early 2000s, when we had BSE, that was kind of the approach, and really it got wrapped in with this whole idea of like animal traceability. And, you know, a lot of those talks are heating up again. So that's what I can kind of see somewhat happening as we kind of move into the fall.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Demet, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
So inflation has been sticky.
Kansas State ag economist Brian Brigeman.
Coming off of the COVID pandemic, we had a number of fiscal policies that were meant to kind of help, you know, U.S. laborers and U.S. citizens get through that very difficult time when we shut down our economy. And those certainly contributed to inflation that we have recently seen, as well as supply chain disruptions. But it's just, even though we're past that, you know, here in 2025, some of those prices still haven't come down. You know, inflation tends to be sticky. So things like housing, insurance, some of those things that we look at that just don't adjust down as quickly. I mean, for many in your audience, just thinking through cash rents are very similar types of things where they just don't adjust down as quickly as maybe they should, given what's going on in the overall economy. So that inflation has remained. And there's still other things that we just don't know what are the implications of it going to be. What the Fed has done on quantitative easing, current fiscal, you know, we passed a new, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. What's that going to do for deficit spending and debt spending? What about, you know, other future fiscal policy measures, economic outcomes? I mean, you know, trade flows. There's so many questions around inflation and where it's going to go. Could it go up? You know, as an economist, I could maybe paint a picture about how that would look. Will it go down? You know, if we do enter into a recession, you would expect that to, you know, inflation to come down. So there's just a lot of uncertainty. And I think the Fed, with their guidance of going to what they're viewing that 3% as more normalized interest rates, is kind of that path that they're going because they do see concerns around the economy.
So inflation may be sticky, but so is the situation on the New World screwworm. Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins.
Unfortunately, what we found was Mexico has failed to enforce proper cattle movement controls in infected regions and is not tending to fly traps daily as promised, which hinder our real-time detection capabilities. This is unacceptable. Mexico must fully implement the agreed upon protocols and must expand surveillance immediately and lock down cattle movement in infected zones. Anything less puts both of our nation's herds and our food supply at grave risk. 100% compliance must be demonstrated by Mexico before a border reopening plan will even be considered. In the meantime, the One Big Beautiful Bill thankfully increases funding for animal disease prevention and response at this critical moment. We are deploying 200 USDAers into Mexico to address this in partnership with their SENESCA, their USDA. We have already reviewed about 13,000 different fly samples from about 8,000 different traps that USDA had already set out in Mexico. This has been the only one we have found so far, but my commitment is, as we are getting hourly updates, is we will immediately let the public know. Our partnership in Texas and Arizona and New Mexico becomes especially more important, and we are working arm in arm, not just through USDA, but through Homeland Security, Department of State, etc. We'll likely have another big couple of announcements on this in the coming day or two, working directly with President Trump as he is fully engaged and aware of the threat that this poses specifically to our cattle, but really to all of our livestock.
It's Agriculture Today.
This land, there's no more perfect place on earth. It provides more than the crop you grow or the herd you tend. It gives you purpose. And to help young, beginning, and small farmers fulfill their purpose, Capital Farm Credit is here for you. Our decades of experience providing advice, products, and opportunities can help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.